Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. And this is the section about EU days. It's the 19th of February I want to talk about. This is basically a very special day because of in 2021, today basically, or now it's one day later, I record this podcast to celebrate that America is back to the Ring of Fire. What is meant with this? Now it was this conference, the Munich Security Conference. That's the biggest European transatlantic event about security topics. And Ambassador Ischinger, congratulations. He managed in this digital format to get all the very important personalities of the Western world, led, of course, by the president of the US, to speak at this event. And also then important declarations. And what will, I think, go down in history is this statement, America is back. And also that ring of fire. That is the word Ambassador Ischinger is using always. So let's discuss this a bit. What is actually meaning America is back? Was America gone anywhere recently? I think not. Yeah. Obviously, it's a political statement against Trump and the Trump presidency, and that's well deserved, yeah, because Trump was really a coincidental president and should have never been president. And you know, when you listen to some of my podcasts, I think he was very closely coordinating his policies with Russia, and he would also not have been elected without Russian interference, and so on and so on. That's all true. But to say that America is back, you know, that means that America was gone somewhere, it's not true. It's a superpower. It's the only superpower in the world. It's always there, and it has always been very active, also during the Trump years. And it was just maybe a little bit less active in Europe, but it was definitely also active in Europe, there's no doubt, from Macedonia to Ukraine, from the recognition of Israel of Kosovo, and also the whole dialogue and the Washington agreements between Serbia and Kosovo, you cannot really say that America disappeared. Yeah? That it is back, that's of course meaning that it's back in Europe. And please, we have to understand that as well. America is back in full strength in Europe after a period when American presidents, Obama and Trump, we're thinking that the Europeans should take care more about European issues. And to some extent, actually, that's quite logically. Shouldn't we in Europe take care a bit of more about our own problems and contribute to the solution? So, yes, I think everybody will agree, the Americans, everybody, the Europeans, when you say, should Europe take care about European issues, I think everybody will agree. So, but the result of this basically 12 years already, or let's say a decade of American withdrawal from Europe to some extent, or at least telling to Merkel to take care more about Europe and hoping that Europe will sort out some issues in the European periphery in a relation with Russia and so on. You know, the reality is when you look back and when you go step by step along this ring of fire, this famous ring of fire, that the last decade was basically the worst in European history. From the seven decades, we have had the minimum results in economic reform, in security, and we have this ring of fire as a result of the American withdrawal. Because Europe is definitely not ready to take care of Europe or settle European issues. Most of all, we are not able to settle the relation with Russia in any meaningful form. But all the other issues from Russia to Libya, where did we have some significant progress in the last decade? I mean, that America is back is basically also the result of the dire need that America must come back because it's basically in a crisis, Europe, and especially in a crisis on the European periphery. And without America, we are absolutely incapable to have any progress. And, you know, this is a testimony of our weakness that America must come back. Obviously, we can talk lofty about climate, and that's important, yeah? About multilateralism. What exactly is that? And, you know, that is a very new word recently, that we want a world which is from many sides that take decisions. Yeah? That's the aim of our policy. Don't we want to have a better, freer, fairer world? Why we suddenly have multilateralism? And what exactly have we done in the last 10 years for multilateralism, when I suppose that means that we somehow include more countries in the working world order, in the OECD, the WTO, the UN? Have we really got so much new members? I mean, I have made many podcasts already about that one. But I don't see the massive progress in this kind of period when Europe was in charge of its own European issues. And it's also not exactly true that in the last years the Americans have been totally idle, sitting, only taking care of Obamacare or building a wall. It is even the most terrible president, and like President Trump, he has been very active in the Middle East. He has this Abraham's Accord, as they are called, these peace agreements between four Arab nations or four Muslim nations and Israel. I mean, Morocco, Israel, the Emirates, Israel, Sudan, Israel. I mean, it's not, you cannot put it away and say it's nothing, yeah, just because of politics, yeah. It's some achievement. And there's, it's not only, I mean, I'm in the danger to be then sounding like somebody who wants to defend Trump. I'm far from that, yeah. And I'm on record on that one, yeah. But to say America is back, yeah, as if it would have been lost somewhere. I mean, it's of course important that America is now in the climate agreement and is hopefully then also supporting the WTO court, these panels again, and many of the other issues. But if we think that we are now a sovereign Europe, what exactly were our contributions to any of the big issues? Are we totally paralyzed without America? Are we unable to solve some other issues? Did, for example, the American president stop us to start negotiations with Albania and North Macedonia? I mean, I don't think so. I will go to all these issues, but when you just think a moment, America is back because we are unable to get anything done. Obviously, it's easier than with an American president who also supports the whole institutional setup. I understand that. Yeah. But let's now also see, when America is back, that means that the American president will start to tackle all these issues systematically, which are in the European Ring of Fire. And will we then also support it? Because the moment you confront Putin, you confront also Erdogan, you confront Assad, yeah, you try to make peace in Libya, then you have to use also coercion. You have to make decisions. You have to be united. You have to really impose your will as well. Because there are bad actors out there. They will not just accept America is back and now Navalny is free and the Russian troops withdraw from Ukraine or Assad will retire. It's not exactly like that. If you want a nuclear-free Iran, you have to arm wrestle them into doing that. Huh? I mean, it's somehow, and we will see how the celebration of Joe Biden will be in European circles and media once he really gets going and imposes this new American back and build back better agenda on Iran, on Russia, on Belarus. And I wonder how much then all this situation will be so united in Europe. Yeah? And it's really a kind of, and I call since, and I don't want to be misunderstood because I talk very often how important America is. Yeah, but that we are basically an American Europe. But it wouldn't hurt if we are a little bit more capable. I mean, no American president would have anything against a Europe which enlarges Schengen, the Eurozone, NATO. Yeah, let's us be the driver to get Bosnia into NATO. Let's us get Macedonia, Albania, Montenegro in the EU, or let's enlarge the Eurozone faster. I mean, it's nobody in Washington would object to a Schengen enlargement of Romania or Bulgaria or Croatia. Or nobody in Europe would have anything against, nobody in Washington would anything against us granting the EU potential candidate status to Ukraine. I mean, these are all long overdue issues. I mean, it's us completely incapable. And when you see this ring of fire, because it's now the Mr. Ischinger, I admire him and his really great personality and a great strategic thinker. And he understands many things, and he has termed this ring of fire. I think also with Mr. Borrell together, but it's really true. Let's see. We have Russia, Belarus, we have Ukraine, we have Crimea, we have the Caucasus War, we have the crisis now in Georgia, the crisis in our relation with Turkey, we have the crisis in the Bosnian-Serbian dialogues in 7 years, we have little progress in Bosnia. We have one thing achieved, yeah. That's Macedonian. That's the Prespa settlement, and also that's the NATO accession. But I can guarantee you, and I will make a separate podcast about that, that it is very much American power which carried this agreement to finalization and to get it ratified in Skopje and to get the agreement on all sides. It's very much America, especially in Greece, to get the consensus done in these years, but it's also very much America directly in Macedonia to be absolutely countering Russian aggression and Russian efforts to block this agreement. And definitely also to get it passed through the parliament. Absolutely, that was American effort. Yeah? Europeans were also active. So it's a joint success. I don't want to exclude when something works, everybody is successful involved in it. But it's not that the Americans were somehow absent, on the contrary. So in Turkey, then we have also Syria, obviously. Who has basically liberated eastern Syria? It's America. Under Obama, it was left to ISIS. And now it is returned at least to some decency in some aspects. Yeah? So where were the Europeans? I don't know. Huh? So in Iraq, very much the Americans were in Iran. Now Iran is almost close to the nuclear weapons. Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Libya. So basically all the region from Libya to Russia. What exactly have we achieved in the last 10 years in that ring of fire, as Mr. Ischinger says? I wonder, where's our progress? Did Putin change his behavior because of European diplomacy? We have just recently seen this visit of humiliation with Mr. Borrell being abused during the press conference, and three European diplomats at the moment, I think they sent him the message that these three diplomats were sent out, expelled from Russia during the press conference or on the same morning. I don't know the exact timing, but this was definitely meant as a very strict, clear snap against Europe. So why does Russia actually change its behavior because of our policy? I don't see that really very much. You know, this Navalny theater in the courts, I mean, that's an insult for a Council of Europe member, where just 1 year ago, France and Germany have insisted to reimpose the voting rights of Russia in the Council of Europe in June 2019, in order to have good behavior. And then Russia makes out of anything which we call the rule of law, like a Stalinistic, how do you call this, this kind of show trials. Yeah? This is really persiflage. This is unbelievable. And so we have really no influence on Russia. And so we have no leverage. This is the fact, yeah. So it's good America is back, but it's America is back because we are without influence. And in Belarus, since August, we have this open situation. Where's the European contribution? Where's the European clear decision to de-recognize Lukashenko, for example, or to have really very strict sanctions against the regime and also the state companies? No, we have, of course, done some sanctions, but we have now 25 years of sanctions against Lukashenko with some variations, obviously, in some different phases, but it's not very effective. We have very minimal influence, and every day he's beating down the opposition and the demonstrators, the poor people of Belarus. How do we help them? Where's our concrete Europe for the Europeans? It should also go along with some capacities and some effect and some impact. In Ukraine, since now we have, it's actually exactly these days, and the end of February is always the period of the anniversary of the Euromaidan, the massacre of the Maidan, and the Crimean takeover, exactly this week, from the 18th to the 27th, yeah. So where is actually, where is our progress? Where is our results as Europeans? At least in the battlefield, okay, there's less war since the Debaltseve, but a lot of people have died still in the fighting. And even today, there's news from massive fighting at the open wound in the eastern Donbass. So there is no way of kind of, you can say that at least we have a kind of a frozen conflict. No, this is not at all a frozen conflict. It's hot and it's every day, every month people die in that conflict. Crimea, there's not at all any progress in terms of a better treatment of the Crimean Tatars. No, at all. They are prosecuted minority today in the Council of Europe member, which the French and the Germans have insisted that Russia has the full voting rights and can somehow say, wonderful, we are the Council of Europe member. And Navalny's attorney can complain to the Council of Europe and to the European Court of Human Rights. And let's see, maybe after some years in the prison camp, in the labor camp, he will get somehow a positive court judgment, which Russia will reject to implement. Yeah? And when it's not, in diplomacy, you should also have some means to live up to your principles. In Georgia, now we have a big political crisis again. Russia obviously very active, and the background of all this crisis 2019, 2020 is Russian meddling in Georgia. This Russian parliamentarian who came, and then the protest against him. Just recently, we had a war between Armenia and Azerbaijan. This was for years now a very hot conflict on Twitter and everybody who wanted to be involved. And I was personally sending thousands of tweets to the Azeris and to the Armenians not to go to war, but they went to war. Europe had almost no influence on all actors, and the peace was brokered in Russia. That's the status. And of course, in Turkey, Turkey had a lot of influence, yeah. The side of the Azeris. So it was a kind of a regional in the European periphery. These are all countries, I'm talking about all countries, they are member of the so-called Eastern Partnership. Yeah? So far to the success of the Eastern Partnership. One war, one completely rigged election, and afterwards a complete crackdown in Belarus, Russian meddling in Georgia, and the ongoing war in Ukraine and the annexation in Crimea. And Moldova is now again with a pro-European president, the third time the pro-Europeans have won, and we have done nothing. Did we give them a EU potential candidate status or the euro or anything significant? We celebrate Mrs. Ursula von der Leyen is not above herself to celebrate if the Romanians put a little bit of medical equipment to Moldova. I mean, this is so insignificant to what we should really do. And the whole EAP is in complete crisis. It's the Ring of Fire. And our relation with Russia is as bad as it could be. And it's man, we are totally incapable. That's the fact. And so America has to come back, basically, to help us on this periphery, because we are so divided and so incapable to get our will done and also to make anything positive for these countries in significant terms. Obviously, we help with money and with assistance, yes. Yeah? But on the bigger picture, this is not the fundamental thing that is needed. And in the Balkans, Serbia is rolling big and high. Now he has, it's a total crisis again in the dialogue. especially because Serbia is not ready for any concessions. The only country where there was progress, I mentioned already, was Macedonia with NATO membership. That was major. And so America was definitely not lost. America was really very laser focused to get this done. And it would have not been possible without American leadership. Be sure about it. So in Crimea, I talked about the Caucasus. Yes, on Iran. Let's see. When now the American president will first negotiate, but the Iranians don't want to negotiate. I mean, to lift all the sanctions after Iran has now 4 years additional nuclear development. I have made it very clear already. Germany and Austria, I come from Austria, but I can tell you about Germany as well. I know very well. They have decided to leave nuclear energy behind, and they are doing it. So, and we have in Germany and Austria almost no carbon energy because we have no natural petrol. Yeah? And also this we want to leave. And now I ask you, why does Iran need nuclear energy? If we in Austria and the Germans don't need nuclear energy, and we have a highly industrialized economy, we have a highly advanced economy, we are one of the richest countries in the world, yeah? By far, we could be better, actually, with some better reforms, never forget it. But we don't use this form of energy generation. Why, please, does Iran need nuclear energy? When you know this is a country run by crazy theocratic extremists who have tortured the people for 40 years and led many wars, and lead many wars from Yemen to Syria to Lebanon, and in Iraq as well, they make a lot of mischief, yeah? And this kind of hostile regime, which is it, now wants to blackmail the world to have nuclear civil energy legally. In reality, they will obviously use it to make nuclear weapons. Let's not fool ourselves. We have these illusions because then European businesses and also the Austrians, they are always very keen. Yeah, no, let's balance. Let's make friends in Tehran. Let's get some business. It will be great for business. Yes, for some moment. Then later they will anyhow nationalize it again in the next crisis or blackmail us once we have invested. Yeah? So it's not so easy with the Iranian regime. The experience shows that nobody has made great business in Iran. Be sure about it until 79, before maybe. But if these are not really serious partners to work, and when Joe Biden, because it will certainly come to a crisis, it will, with the moment you really work with this issue, because Trump has mainly let all these issues slip. His tactic was, where's a quick win, and then I work on it, where's also electoral beneficial back in at home. And that was the whole, and there is also some lobbying to be gained because there is a commercial contract to gained from K Street. That was his foreign policy in a way, yeah? And everybody knows that. But the reality is once you really confront difficult issues like the Iranian issues and you negotiate, then you also have to coerce them into submission in some way. Because they definitely want nuclear weapons, so you have to make some arrangement that they get they're not doing it, yeah? And that we'll see how much European solidarity with America, once Biden is getting a bit tougher on all these issues, we will see how much solidarity and transatlantic partnership will be there. So because we are unfortunately lofty talking, and we are talking always about our ideals, about our values, and so then we solve no issues, because we anyhow have no capabilities to solve anything in the relation with the big regional hostile powers, Russia and also Iran, Syria. I have not mentioned Syria, obviously Syria. So let's think about it. There will be, for example, the necessity to deal with Syria in some way. Do you want to have somehow whitewash Assad after 500,000 dead? What we will do? So ultimately, there is no alternative to regime change or to build a gigantic wall about it and leave it to Russia. This is what Trump has done. So once you address this issue, then I want to see if there is any kind of common position possible inside NATO and inside the European Union. I'm very doubtful. And also the obvious open issue, our ally and complicated partner, Turkey, which is basically left alone a bit because that America is back is especially important for Turkey, because Turkey was in a way the adult in the room. It's not true that Erdogan is completely crazy as he is portrayed by in the Austrian or in the French media. No, no, he is in the eastern flank. He has Syria, Iran, Russia as neighbors. He is very much in the center of responsibility. He has done many wrong things. I'm not defending him. But this is exactly happening when the lead global power is in a way withdrawing or is doing only transactional deals. And then all the minor regional powers have to somehow deal left alone and with themselves. And the Europeans were not helpful. Because just repeating the Greek line, because Greek is a EU member and has also a commissioner and is also in the political parties, obviously big, and then you just repeat everything Athens wants, is not a policy for a big power in the Eastern Mediterranean. You have to think a little bit about the regional context and make sure that Turkey has also a place in European policy. Not inside the European Union, but inside European policy making, because it's a really very important partner for us on the eastern flank in these hostile neighbors from Iran, Syria to Russia. So here really we are, and then of course there is Libya, of which is the other conflict which is open. And now there is a peace process, so I'm optimistic. I hope that there will be a settlement, but I have called many times already for new states in Libya and in Syria, and I repeat it, because the best way with such broken states is not to hammer them into some kind of coalition agreements when there is no will for unity. It's not national unity, our main, most important strategic objective in the European periphery. Peace, security, and prosperity, and decency regional kind of peace, and that must be the way. But national unity of Libya or Syria is not our target, in a sense. If it's good, if it's achievable, it's nice. Yeah, but we can also live with 6 different states in Syria and 3 different states in Libya. Why not? There is not a fundamental objection to this when they are then living peacefully together, and when we can stabilize the situation for in the name of the people and of the neighbors much better like that. But, you know, all these settlements which we have to see and all the complicated issues from Russia to Libya, they will require some tough decisions. And the moment these negotiations will roll out now in the next 4 years, all the European unity will evaporate, because everybody has single different interests and nobody really wants to coerce and nobody wants to confront from Putin to Assad to Iran. And then it will be very, very complicated. But we could have solved some of the issues before with some kind of better leadership, but we were not ready. And now we have to call for the American partners to be back, and like children who are happy that the teacher is back. Yeah. Oh, finally we learn something again. Yeah. I mean, this is really very disappointing. We are now 70 years in European Union and in NATO, and we always have this lofty rhetoric about European sovereignty and all this kind of talk which come from Paris. But where is any kind of concrete solutions or progress done by Paris? Paris has stopped EU enlargement, has basically also stopped all progress on the eastern periphery with any institution, from Schengen to the Euro, and has sent warships to the eastern Mediterranean to threaten Turkey, a NATO ally. How productive was this? We are on different sides, all our efforts on different sides supporting different groups in Libya. How good is that? Yeah, I mean, and then we have different, obviously, between Eastern European countries or Central and European countries, in Germany and France. Basically, everybody has a different Russian policy. I mean, then we say America is back. Yeah, I hope so, because we are really very far from where we should be. And there is even, and that is the most worrying thing, is there is no kind of decency in the assessment of the facts. Yeah, Because we always then are a little bit anti-Boris, Boris, I'm talking about Johnson. Yeah, that's also understandable. And in the past, it was very easy to have this anti-Trump consensus because he was quite terrible. And so everybody was united against him, but not in any kind of forward-reaching agenda of getting something settled, but just, against Trump. Yeah, that was an easy consensus. Yeah. But we have no new member since 2013 in the European Union, no new member in the Eurozone since 2014, since Lithuania. We have blocked all enlargements. Yeah. We have not really done grandiose things. The last great achievement, of course, that was big, to have another 750 billion spent, first time united, to take common debts in the European Union. That was good. But at the same time, when Biden comes in the room, he is back. He puts 1.9 billion extra on the table. And that's the whole 7 years budget now of the European Union for 7 years. He has just put extra on the table for next week to be voted. Yeah. So America is back. The 19th of February is really very good. Yeah. It hopefully goes down in history as a really change for a common transatlantic agenda on all these issues to address the issues of the Ring of Fire. But let's be also a little bit, how you call it in English? Yeah, the word is when you are a little bit modest. Yeah, you show some kind of self-critical attitude towards your own fragilities. Yeah. And with this modesty, you can make better foreign policy decision. Because when you are not saying euro sovereignty and, we solve our issues ourselves, but you ask for help, you ask also explain to your people that these are really difficult issues. We have certain choices to make, but at the same time fulfill the missions of our founding fathers. Yeah. Enlarge NATO, enlarge EU, enlarge the Euro and CEFTA, EFTA and all the other things which I have said already a lot of times. But, we simply are paralyzed. Yeah? And then, in a way, we have to call for America because of our own inability to get anything done. And that's really very sad, actually, when you think about it. And now I'm optimistic, to close on the optimistic. All these issues, not all of them maybe, but many of them will be solved in the coming years. And I'm optimistic that it can be done. And I'm really calling for Europe to have a little bit of moment of reflection, modesty, and a little bit of decency. And to also, when the next moment comes, America will try to settle some of these issues, that we are not then getting a kind of a collapse that, that's really wild, but we are supportive of really serious settlements, and that I think should be the way ahead. And then also the transatlantic partnership would be very good. First of all, as I have said it very clearly, the EU must send the application to join NATO. That's absolutely important. We have to talk to all our neutrals and get this done. And also to make it very clear that we now use this window of opportunity to get the free trade agreement with America done. And once these two things are done, our relation will be also much better. And also Russia and the Libyan crisis and Erdogan and everybody will take us much more serious. Because then we are also more serious. And I think that should be the clarity of the coming weeks and days. And I hope with America back, the Ring of Fire, we can somehow extinguish some of the crisis fires in our periphery and basically also enlarge our institutions to include and to be more open. And I think that will be step by step settling a lot of the issues when we believe to come back to our values. And that Europe is back again. That's my call, basically. America is back. Europe must be back as well. And together we can settle all these issues. But my dear fellow European friends from Austria, Germany, and whoever is listening, it's very much our crisis. It's our responsibility as well to live up to the task of contributing to the settlement of many of the issues in this Ring of Fire. And we have failed in the last decade. And it's time to get our act together. So, Europe is back. That's what I call for. Be back, Europe. America was never gone. We were unfortunately lost in the last decade, and I hope it's now time to get going and to be strong, united with our American partners, friends, and allies. So, thanks a lot for listening.